say is at a crucial stage. It's not because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people try to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing wet. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're safer, but they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. Quick shout outs right off the top to Chief, host of Simple Facts of Life, first one in the chat room today, and then Boyd the Alaskan in just mere seconds after that. Thanks, guys, for being the first couple of folks in. Hopefully a few more people will join us here as Kel's show lets out, as she was hosting one of her two great programs that can be found right here at blogtalkradio.com. Tonight, of course, being Infidels Are Watching, better known as IAW Radio, part of the Global Patriot Radio Network. You can look it up in any one of those fashions, and you'll find that show. She's just finishing up. Folks usually migrate over. She had a pretty good crowd earlier too, and she was having a great show. She was having fun, you could tell, and I always love her energy when she's having a good time. It's a lot more fun, I think, for everyone else too. Some interesting topics, especially that last one she was talking about before I had to sneak out of here, involving the biocontainment lab in Manitoba. Anyway, glad to have you with us. Lots of stuff to get to. We will try to do exactly that. But my scheduled guest this evening is the return of a recent guest, a former U.S. congressman from the great state of Colorado, and currently a member of the advisory board for We Build the Wall. Mr. Tom Tancredo will be joining us again, and we will be talking about these I hate to even describe it as such because it really didn't feel like it. The mass immigration raids that ICE conducted over this past weekend. We'll talk a little bit about that, how we were sitting back, popping a little popcorn, and watching law be enforced. We'll do that. We'll talk a little bit about We Build the Wall as well. Can't miss the opportunity. Tom, in his last visit, actually was giving us a pretty good story about one of their successes And like I told him then, I know it sounds to me like there's a lot more stories to be told. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity. But there are other things that are happening. And one of the things that happened was breaking just a little bit before airtime. And that has been, for those of you who are listening at KYAH 540 AM Utah's Talk Authority and WCET 101.7 FM Columbia, South Carolina, the time of the live broadcast here is 7/16/2019. It's Tuesday evening, and it's just a little after 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, this is breaking just a little while before before I came on. Yeah, probably first, I saw the first headline about an hour before now. Planned Parenthood has made a change. They've decided that they're previous president of only 10 months simply wasn't good enough, period. So while pro-life advocates have been successfully passing bills limiting abortion in various states across the country, Planned Parenthood today, at the time of the live broadcast, that being Tuesday, removed president of the organization, Dr. Lena Nguyen, who was named president, as I said, only a mere 10 months ago. I think that might be the shortest reign of a finalized president of the organization. Now, the New York Times reported, quote, "The move came after hours of negotiations between the board of directors, Lena Nguyen." According to two people familiar with the decision, people familiar with the move said there had been internal strife over her management and that the group felt it needed a more aggressive political leader to fight the efforts to roll back access to abortions. So the new acting president was unanimously chosen by Planned Parenthood's board, Alex McGill Johnson, the co-founder of the Preception Institute, who will also serve as chief executive of both Planned Parenthood Federation of America and Planned Parenthood Action Fund. McGill Johnson released a statement that read, and I quote, "I am proud to step in and to serve as acting president and facilitate a smooth leadership transition in this critical moment for Planned Parenthood and the patients and communities we serve. I thank Dr. Nguyen, but not really, for her service and her commitment to patients." So Nguyen stated in an interview with the New York Times back in May that, quote, "There are thousands of people who wake up every day thinking that their job is to take away everything that we stand for, to take away bodily autonomy, to take away the right to health care for millions of people who depend on us." Obviously, spin. The fact is, the pro-life folks, people like you and the people who typically listen to the show, we've been winning this battle. We've been winning this fight. More states are moving our direction than are going their direction. The states that they're winning, the states that are moving forward and getting bigger, getting stronger, the states in which these folks are accruing harsher, more draconian activities, not only allowing for Planned Parenthood to expand when abortions are available, but the very notion that they should be receiving taxpayer dollars to pay for all of it, are states where leftists pretty much run the show anyway. So at the end of the day, they simply felt that Dr. Nguyen simply wasn't politically aggressive enough. They want her out trying to win battles that they don't even understand it's their own fault they're losing. We talked about it quite a bit in the early days when the New York State late-term abortion bill was made into law, about how this was going to create a backlash. And then when the Virginia governor stepped up and made statements that were even harsher than what was being celebrated in New York, it became a galvanizing moment for the pro-life movement in this country and in Canada and to some of our other neighbors around the globe. However, it's been most actively seen right here in the States. When you see states like Louisiana and Alabama and Georgia and Tennessee, thankfully being among them, passing laws that move towards heartbeat bills, states like Ohio passing heartbeat bills, when you see personhood granted essentially as soon as you recognize that there's a baby there, as they did in Alabama, it's phenomenal stuff. And the bottom line is they're losing the argument because people are coming to realize what the argument really is. Quick shout outs now to Bigfoot and Blanky, who joined us as well. I think I said that right. Been a while since I've seen you in here, and if I'm mispronouncing call sign, I apologize. In the meanwhile, Chief said the body count was too low, and I think that's exactly right as far as they're concerned. So now we can expect yet a new hard line push in that direction. Now, with that out of the way, I definitely need to talk a little bit about this debacle that's going on in DC with the Mod Squad, the Scary Squad, the ridiculous, the AOC Squad, whatever you want to call these people. I don't even – I was going to let this go. I didn't mention it Sunday, even though it was going strong over the weekend. Then Monday night I saw – like, okay. Now – here's the thing. Today, the Democrats in the House pushed forward a condemnation of Donald Trump. Okay, so it's all politics as usual. And when it comes right down to it, here's the deal. Donald J. Trump is not – Bigfoot still says Gang of Four. I saw you in Kel's show earlier mention that. That's not a bad thing either, but – you know, these gangs of whatever have actually been on legitimate points. This Gang of Four basically held a press conference to cry and call for an impeachment because Donald Trump hurt off B-Wings on Twitter. Wah. That's all that was. But here's the deal. Donald J. Trump is not a racist, okay? He's not a racist. He's demonstrated that quite nicely over the years. Now, there are some questionable things from the past, especially in the earlier days when some of the businesses that he took over from his father, all this. I've heard all these excuses before. Oh, he illegally had marked some sections of these developments as for whites and then others for colors. That doesn't make you racist. That makes you doing business the way it was done at the time. That doesn't make it right either. You may want that to be racist. You can even say it was a racist business practice. But because that's the way everyone else was doing business at the time, doesn't make you racist for conducting business as business is done. It isn't something where you just break the mold when you're talking about the type of real estate development that they were doing at the time. You can hold that all you want to, though. You want to cling to that and say that that's what makes him a racist? Fine, whatever you want to do. But Donald J. Trump is not a racist. He's got plenty of evidence to the contrary if you want to run it down. But that does not mean that Donald J. Trump is above saying racist things for political gain. And I really think that that's what's happening here. Now, I don't acknowledge that there is something overtly racist about the go back to your home country. You can say that to me. Guess where my home country is? It's right here. It's America. I'll go back to America, okay? So what's that mean? If I was in Washington, D.C., and Donald J. Trump said, go back to my home country, what's that mean to me? That means I'm going back to Tennessee. It means I'm getting the heck out of his way. But what is wrong, the Odd Squad? I like that, Chief. That's a good one, the Odd Squad. I actually would just rather refer to them as the Dip, something I can't say because this gets replayed on terrestrial radio. And then adds what? But, There is nothing overtly racist about the statement itself. However, it was intentionally fashioned in a way that would ring those bells, that would get that attention. Now, people like to talk sometimes about how Donald J. Trump is always playing three-dimensional chess. His opponents and his detractors like to say, well, he's not even playing a very good game of checkers. Well, if that's the case, how do you explain his accomplishments to this point? And I'm not saying this is a case of three-dimensional chess, but I am saying that this so far has worked out exactly the way he would have wanted to for political purposes. Now, I myself would like to see a return of dignity to the office where we're not playing this level of political game. That's me with my Pollyanna views of what I would love this country to be and how I would love for it to operate. I mean, I make fun of the left all the time for wanting to have their kumbaya moments and hug a tree. But honestly, I would like to see a little more unity and a lot less of this divisiveness to the point that we can't even talk to one another if we disagree in the least. And so I know it may sound kind of counterintuitive to my usual message when I say that, but here's the deal. Donald Trump knows we are moving in a direction where we are heavy into the election cycle, and this works on multiple levels to his advantage. We were just talking this past week about an apparent power struggle between AOC and her squad and Nancy Pelosi. They were literally using identity politics against both Nancy Pelosi and then certain members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And Ms. Presley has even took it further during her press conference on Monday night. She even made the ridiculous statements that they don't need any more black folks there that don't have a black voice. They don't need any more people of color there that don't sound like they have a voice of someone of color. They don't need any more queer people that don't have a queer voice. What exactly are these voices she's talking about, you may ask? Now, everybody sitting in this chat room, everybody that listens to the show on a regular basis, everybody who even pays half an ounce of attention knows what she means by this. She means if they don't agree with us, if they're not supporting the Democratic agenda, if they're not voting for Democratic people, and if they're not on board for the uber super progressive push to the ultra left where we just embrace socialism and ignore liberty and freedom. If you don't have a voice that agrees with that, then they have no need for you. They don't want you to participate. They don't want the Ron Edwards of the world. They don't want you fill in the blank. They don't want the Mia Loves. They don't want anybody who might be a person of color or who might be gay who actually has conservative ideologies to even speak up. Because number one, you're busting their bubble. But number two, it hurts their feelings that they then have to explain why they're attacking you when they're supposed to be defending you. So they just want you to sit down and shut up. They want everyone that doesn't agree with them to sit down and shut up, including the leftist progressives that are trying to pretend to be moderate right now, you know, like Nancy Pelosi, for example. That's what they want. So while this feud was going on and everybody was talking about, oh, no, what's going to happen with the party? What does Donald J. Trump do? He takes up for Nancy Pelosi. And then the next day, he tells these four freshmen, without naming any, isn't it hilarious how everybody knew exactly who he meant, even though he didn't name any names? Isn't it almost a sign of guilt that these four ladies of color stepped up and went to their crying session again because Orange Man Bad hurt our feelings on Twitter? Isn't it funny? The entire Democratic Party is once again unified. Now, here's how that works for Donald Trump. Number one, when everybody attacks Donald Trump as being racist, most of the Trump supporters who have been there for a while, they don't hear that as an attack against Donald Trump. They hear that as an attack against them. And boy, white males in this country, even ones who have typically supported Democrats in the past, are dang tired of being called racist just because they're white. They're tired of it enough. The racial fatigue has raised to a level that they are now willing to step up and take their happy backsides to the polls and pull the lever for somebody who at least looks like on the surface is going to take up for them instead of step back and take the crap. The unification of the Democratic Party also helps us to point and say, this is what the party looks like. The only difference between the Nancy Pelosi's and the AOC's is the fact of how fast they want to take it there and how honest they want to be about what they're really after. That works well going into the election cycle as well. But the other thing that is almost genius, and I really do hope this is a case of three-dimensional chess, because I would hate to think that this was just Donald Trump not being strategic. Because the other thing that really works here is, who's talking about Robert Francis O'Rourke right now? Who's talking about Joe Biden? Who's talking about Elizabeth Warren? You might hear a little something here, a little something there. Beto announced that he's got slave owners in his background, in his lineage. He had a great-grandparent, I think it was, on both sides of his family. Ooh, double dipping. He's a double offender. You've taken all the air out of the room. You have taken a great deal of time where, again, they're showing the venom and the hatred and the lack of understanding that they are being played. Even if it's not intentional, they're still getting played. Now, you're not going to reach any of those people that are all in for the other side. You're not, you know, because they've already made it. But those folks in the middle who are tired of being called racist, those folks in the middle who are tired of being ignored by the politicians, they see the We Hate America. They see the Ilhan Omar and the Rashid Tlaib and the AOC and the Miss Presley all standing up and talking about how terrible America is, and then turn around and say, well, I'm more patriotic than most of you, or wow, Donald Trump, so un-American, without even understanding the irony of such a statement after whining and complaining and going on. I don't know if this is intentional, and I do know that it's risky. It's always risky to try and play this game where you tiptoe right up to something that's racist. And this was – I mean, this does tiptoe right up to it. But again, I've heard people going both directions with this argument, and I will attest where I fall that this is not blatantly racist, but it was meant to sound that way just to get this reaction. Because the Dems, they actually gained a little sympathy out and amongst – the heartland, when it looks like they're fighting with each other. Again, you had people, you even had conservatives once again talking about having some level of sympathy for Nancy Pelosi. I myself said it. I've talked about how sad it is when it makes it look like she's one of the sane ones, and how I almost feel bad for her because her job now is essentially herding cats. I've said it a few times. Now, I'm also quick to remind everyone, I'm emphasizing the I almost feel bad for, because she kind of deserves it. What she's done over the years, what Chuckie Schumer's done over the years, what Joe Biden has done over the years, they deserve every last little taste of their own medicine, because the AOCs and the Ilhan Omars are the personification of the mess that they have made, period. End of that discussion. But they can't move their campaigns forward when nobody is talking about time that would have been dedicated to all of these different candidates, or at least the candidates that are still thought of as being first or second tier, time that would have been dedicated to them trying to get their message out, it's gone. It's now bash the orange man bad again. Ooh, he's so bad. So it works perfectly from a strategic level. So it gets everybody riled up on both sides. I know the whole time I was listening to that press, and I don't know if I was fortunate or unfortunate enough to actually get to listen to the press conference live, but it absolutely boggled my mind that this is what we had going on. It was amazing. All right. I do have a caller on the line. Unfortunately, I'm to the point where I'm going to have to change topics, and I'm getting close to the halfway point here. So, caller, if you want to hold on till after the guest comes on here in a bit, I'll try to sneak you in. Otherwise, it's time for me to play the Edwards Notebook and the Songs and Stories for Soldiers, a Veterans Tip of the Day. And after that, we are scheduled to be joined by Mr. former U.S. Congressman from Colorado, Mr. Tom Tancredo. So stay with me, guys. I will be back shortly after this brief break.
In a nation that tries to instill unearned self-esteem in its children, it sure lacks in the effort to protect them. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, according to Mike Adams of naturalnews.com, a child protection bill with broad bipartisan support is under fire by Google because the child protection bill would hold the Silicon Valley tech giants accountable for their alleged complicity in allowing underage children to be abused and sex trafficked via other platforms, specifically against underage children. There are many, including certain tech companies, that profit from child sex trafficking. If passed, the Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act would amend the Communications Decency Act established in 1934. Many believe that big tech companies like Google would no longer be shielded from liability for sex crimes committed on their platforms, specifically against underage children. Perhaps if children were deemed valuable enough to be protected from murder in and outside of the womb, maybe they would have already been more protected from pedophilers and sex traffickers. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me live Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on AmericanMatters.us and 6 p.m. Mountain on KYAH AM 540, Delta, Utah.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
This is Dan Perkins from Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your Veterans Tip of the Day. Have you noticed that interest rates on home loans have dropped at least 1% in the last 6 months? Did you miss the opportunity to refi your home mortgage the last time interest rates were heading lower? Here's your Veterans Tip of the Day. Get focused and know the facts of your existing mortgage. So go to the safe or the shoebox, wherever you have important papers, and look through it and find your mortgage. Next, look through it and find out these three things. When did you take out the loan? The year. How much did you borrow? The amount. And what is the interest rate? Percentage. Write this down on a sticky and put it on the fridge and start looking at bankrate.com for mortgage interest rate. If the new rate is 1% or more lower than the rate on the fridge, start looking at a refi. Remember, a refi puts money in your pocket. This has been Dan Perkins with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I am back. Thanks for staying with us after that very brief break. It is my pleasure and honor to once again welcome back to the show former U.S. Congressman from the great state of Colorado and currently an advisory board member for We Build the Wall, Mr. Tom Tancredo. Tom, thanks for joining us once again, and how are you this evening?
I'm well. It's a beautiful, beautiful evening here in Denver. How's it out there?
Well, right out here in beautiful East Tennessee, it is nearly a perfect summer evening. It's still a little more humid than I would like, but I'll take it compared to what some of the folks have had to deal with over this past weekend.
Right, right. Well, good. And yeah, this is a very enjoyable time. We're just sitting on the patio before you called having dinner and enjoying the weather. So great to talk to you.
All right. Well, again, as I said before, I certainly appreciate it. And, of course, there's plenty of things to talk about right now. A few topics I wanted to try and sneak in real quick. But the first one, of course, is ICE performing what the media was referring to as raids. I don't think it really qualifies as that by my definition.
Right.
But,
right. No, it doesn't. ICE performing their duty. Identifying and taking into custody people who are here illegally and not just that, but have missed their court date. And for the most part, probably 80%, of the people that they are identifying and taking into custody are people who have committed other crimes in the United States, crimes of violence. It is nothing that, first of all, they shouldn't be doing, and it's nothing that is that's a new phenomenon. It's the way the law is set up. Now, you know, under other administrations, they have been sort of hamstrung, but in this one, hopefully, they are not, and they're doing what they should. What's amazing to me, absolutely amazing, and I must say, disheartening, is the fact that so many years, I guess, of this, what I call the cult of multiculturalism, permeating every aspect of our society, education and the pop culture. But it has gotten to the point where you can have people who are charged with the responsibility of actually writing laws, that is to say, congressmen and women, and have them defying the law, breaking the law in front of people who are charged with the responsibility of actually enforcing the law. And that is what's going on all over the country. This is what I think people should be, instead of being concerned about folks who might be, taken into custody because they are here illegally and have missed their date and have committed other crimes, instead of rioting and tearing down the American flag and putting up the American flag, which they did here in Denver two days ago at the detention center. Instead of doing that, all of that anger should be and all of the attention should be focused really and truly on the people who have done things that are against our law. And they should be mad at their legislators and city council people and mayors of sanctuary cities who are aiding and abetting criminal activity. That should be the real issue. That's what every true journalist should, wherever they may be, and believe me, I haven't the foggiest idea of where that could be, but that's where the attention should be, because that's the travesty that we have right now in this country come to the point where we are destroying the concept of the rule of law, and in doing so, it hastens what the left is trying desperately to accomplish, and that is the complete and total destruction of the culture of the United States, and to replace it with what Obama always talked about is he wanted to completely transform America. Yes, he did, and it has happened. And to try to reverse that, they've gotten to the point where if you argue that, if you say no, what's going on here? This is completely ludicrous. The mayors and police chiefs and city and congresswomen and congressmen and senators are actually aiding and abetting the people who are coming into this country illegally, and themselves therefore this is absolutely a felony. This is not something that just could be when there is that thing aiding and abetting, but there is a specific thing in immigration law that says if you aid people in this process, if you help them come into this country illegally, or when they are here, if you help them, that's aiding and abetting, and that is a felony. Why prosecute all of these people, Congress people, mayors, you name it. They should all be arrested and thrown in jail, at least tried for their part in this. Because if not, we have absolutely destroyed the concept of the rule of law. And when that goes, believe me, so does the republic.
Yeah. Well, again, you're absolutely right. I mean, we have a concerted Coward and Piven attempt to collapse our republic.
Yes.
And we have these folks that, again, half of them know that they are breaking the law. Half of these congressmen, they know exactly what they're doing. Those are the ones that have been there long enough to have actually helped pass the laws that we're talking about. And then we probably have a group of about half, some of these younger folks, who have no idea, because it's been so long now since Congress has really done much of anything other than try to enrich themselves. I mean, we talked about this when you visited last time. The party doesn't like it when you rock the boat. They don't like it when you stand on a principle. If you're not on the party platform and towing the party line, they want to get you out of D.C. as quickly as possible. And it's all about chasing their personal goals, whether it be wealth, power, or a combination of two. Yeah. It's been a long
true.
Time.
Absolutely true.
It's
absolutely
been a long
true.
Time since.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say one last thing. let me sneak this out real quick.
We have this little gap. This little gap between, you know, when each of us stops. I don't know if it's what it is, but there's this little bit of time frame that makes this kind of confusing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. It's unfortunately the delay happens, but I was just going to say, unfortunately, it's been a long time since we've had en masse people showing up in Congress to do the people's business, and it's disappointing. And I'll step back and I'll let you make your comment now. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. Well, you are right. I remember a time. I served in the Colorado legislature from 1976 until 81, and which at that time I was appointed to, I resigned from the legislature to take a position in the Reagan administration. And I served in that administration for 8 years and then four. But going way back, I can still remember a time when as Republicans, we argued with Democrats and they argued with us about things like tax policy and highway construction and prison sentences. Those are policy issues over which we had differences. But never was there a difference about the essence of America, the understanding of it, the belief in it. It seemed always that all of us believed in America. We were each working in our own way, you know, to make it better. And they would say the same thing, I'm sure, right now, except the fact that they hate, as the president said and as I said for many, many years, these people hate the America that you and I love, and they will do anything to bring it down. And once you realize that, see, to me, immigration and immigration reform, it's got such a broader sort of meaning to it than just the idea of, you know, people coming across the border illegally, taking jobs that other Americans would take, driving down wage rates, the impacting schools and hospitals and the prison systems and the social services. All those things are problems, but nothing compares to the damage that is done to the culture. And this has got nothing to do, by the way, with race or ethnicity or color of skin, nothing. It's got everything to do with a different attitude about what America is all about. And when you can understand that immigrants coming into the country would not have a good understanding of what America is all about, except for the fact that it is a rich place and that they can make more money. But you would hope that could be tempered by an understanding on the part of the people who are here, the, quote, citizens of the United States, that there is something special about us and about what who we are and what has been accomplished. But that is being eroded and destroyed. And so fewer and fewer, because you don't hear about it in the schools, children have absolutely no idea what America is all about. You know, when you and ask a student, and at any level, I don't care where it is in the spectrum, secondary to college, ask them, what does it mean to be an American? Is citizenship important? And they will give you almost always just blank stare, or deny the importance of citizenship, or of anything that smacks of patriotism. Because, of course, they have been from the time that they went into the school to everything they listened to on television and in the movies and on social media, pop culture, everything tells them there's nothing good about America. So why would they think anything different? I was a civics teacher for about 8 years. I used to argue with my colleagues in the faculty lounge because they would accuse me of propagandizing children. And I would say, because I was trying to teach them America, the real America, and what it was like, what it was about, how it got founded, what our founders had to go through. But these other teachers, and this was in the 70s, mind you, but these other teachers were concerned about my sort of as they called it, the propagandizing. And I would say to them, look, you are an art teacher, but when was the last time a child came into your classroom? This was 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. I said, when was the last time a 7th grader came into your classroom on the first day and said, oh, teacher, I'm so glad I'm here in this art class because I wanted to ask you a little about Picasso's Blue Period. No, of course not. Never happened. Ever would happen. I said, to the English teacher, when was the last time a child came into your classroom in 7th grade and said, you know, teacher, I was reading last night the Shakespearean sonnets, and I was just wondering about X. No, of course not. None of them. Nobody ever. But you think it's okay to teach them why a Shakespearean sonnet is good. Otherwise, they wouldn't know it. And you, the art teacher, you think it's okay to explain to them what is good art, why we appreciate good art. You think it's your job to explain that, and it is. It is also my job to explain exactly what America is all about. Because if none of us do our job in that respect, how do you expect them to know what is good art or good literature or good government?
Yeah. Well, you know, I love hearing this because, again, I love hearing your passion and your love for America as you tell this story. And you make the point quite nicely. That is something that I think a lot of folks are in agreement with that is missing from our public education in particularly, and that is an instilling of a love of America. There's this real quick hair trigger move to try and talk about everything that's wrong with America and completely ignore the high ideas and the moral principles that we were built on and how we have fought tooth and nail to try and live up to those. And with each passing generation, we come a little bit closer. But yeah, we're people. We're flawed. We make mistakes. Sometimes we put the wrong people in positions of authority. And the important thing is we learn from those mistakes and move forward. And if we bury our heads in the sand, we can't learn from those. So when you want to tear down statues or when you want to whitewash history, as they like to call it, to this point, you want to take down murals in public schools because it depicts Washington's life and there's a slave over here, which was part of that history. Let's just hide that instead of embrace the good parts and talk about the bad parts. because, yes, this did happen. It was terrible. Let's move forward. Let's see where we set up that next step where we ended that.
That's right. You know, my wife taught Russian for 27 years. We used to take kids to the old Soviet Union and starting in the 70s. And believe me, it was a challenge. But it was also very rewarding because what we were doing was showing them firsthand what it was like to live under that kind of a system. And it could read stuff in tech, see it glorified in various ways. But once you get there and you see exactly what the people are living under, we would, every time we would leave the Soviet Union, the plane was, you know, we would have maybe, you know, 30 or 40 kids with us, and the plane was 200 or 300 people. But inevitably, the minute that from the Soviet Union, the minute the wheels lifted off the ground, everybody on the plane spontaneously broke into applause. It happened again when the pilot would say, "We have just exited Soviet airspace." Everybody would applaud again because of what they had been through. And so but what we're doing now is what the Soviets did to their citizens. We are erasing history. You know, they had this, if someone fell out of favor, there would be a picture one year of everybody up on the thing, you know, over Red Square when a May Day parade. But the next year, so-and-so wouldn't be there. It would be airbrushed out. And the history books, all of them would have to be turned in and rewritten to about that person's name, whoever it is. That is exactly what we are doing, tearing down statues, putting drapes up over pictures of Washington. This is what is going on here. This is happening in America. How do we justify that? What do we tell? How in the world are we going to explain this to our grandchildren if we have the opportunity? What is like? You know, I mentioned to you that we were sitting out on our patio having dinner, and my sister-in-law was joining us. She just got in from a trip, and they were talking about what it was like when my wife and her sister grew up in Billings, Montana. And in listening to it, I had to say, you know, life was better then. It really was in so many ways, not just that fake nostalgia. It is true that in many ways it was better. There was this, first of all, as I say, a common belief in the value of America, and then a way of life that actually was somewhat more risk-taking than what we have today. And, you know, it's wonderful in a way to think about, I guess, the way it was. I'm sure everybody does this, you know, the nostalgia, everything was better in the old days. But in many ways, it absolutely was. And in some ways, it wasn't. I mean, now, if you live in Denver, Colorado, or Billings, Montana, you were not confronted by the kind of racial problems that you may have been growing up in Selma, Alabama. I must tell you that I grew up in Denver. My parents were blue-collar workers. My mom worked for Johnson's Department Store for 45 years as a clerk. My dad is a truck driver. But never. I saw a picture of my eighth grade St. Catherine's Catholic school class. And then I looked at the wall aside. And when I was looking at this, I looked up on the wall. There was my son, his eighth grade picture from Campbell Elementary, a public school. And I said, my God, if you would look at these two pictures, say which one was private, which one was public, and you would swear that my school was the public school and my son's was the private because his was all white, mine was all every color imagined. But I never thought about it. My parents never talked about it. We never, you know, my mom and dad, as I said, were blue-collar people, but never had a discussion about, oh my gosh, how bad black people were or brown people. No, it was just they were people. Now, as I say, we lived in different places, and if we'd lived somewhere else, we might have a different impression. But I will tell you that racism never entered the lexicon in my family or the thought patterns. And now everything is viewed through the prism of racism. Everything. I just pray to God that we actually would achieve Martin Luther King's dream of a society that, you know, looks only at what is inside and not the color of one's skin. That would be wonderful. And I feel that way. And I always say my opinions on immigration have nothing to do with race or color or anything else, because believe me, we have in fact assimilated people into the United States over all these years that came from everywhere, and they were of every color. And I don't know, I have this little anecdote. I can tell if we have time. I'm not sure. I guess I can ask you if I should go on. I know I really kind of monopolized this conversation.
Well, you know, actually, if I was having a problem with it, Tom, I would interrupt. But part of what I enjoyed so much about our last conversation is it's clear you're a storyteller, and it's interesting. It's compelling. Now, I would like to intervene at this point, and sadly, the point you're making is the very statements you just made, Tom. According, if I was to listen to the squad, they would tell me that itself was racist. How dare you talk about being colorblind after having grown up in Colorado? What would you know? That's racist just by being insulated from racism. You're right. It is absolutely insane. I definitely did want to talk a little bit about We Build the Wall again, because obviously something that needs to be talked about. But before we do, and we've got about 5 minutes, so I know I'm kind of being pressed here. You touched on it a little bit before we talk about We Build the Wall, though. I would like a little deeper of your take on this incident that happened over in Aurora, where they did take down the American flag at the ICE Detainment Center, raise the Mexican flag. 2 decades ago, that would have been seen as an act of war. And it said how removed we are from people understanding what it actually means. You claim that territory. I know, again, we're up against it, but I would love a little bit deeper take on that. And then, like I said, we got about 5 minutes, so we'll switch over to We Build the Wall after that.
Sure. Well, it is amazing, because what happened at the detention center was something that is indicative of what I talked about earlier in terms of the breakdown of the rule of law. Here we had a group of protesters around, by the way, and the fact that these there's nothing spontaneous about this, okay? All of these protesters and all these protests around the country are organized, paid for, and scripted. The signs are all, prepared. And so they got there, and they're screaming and yelling about the detention center. And a group takes down the American flag, burns it, raises the Mexican flag, and takes down another flag, desecrates it. It's called the Thin Blue Line. It's a flag to police officers who've been killed in the line of duty. All of this happens while the chief of police in Aurora is there on the scene, as well as a whole bunch of city council people, egging them on. Mind you, now not the city, I would say not the chief of police, but the city council people all yelling in, you know, do it, absolutely, yelling and clapping at the burning of the American flag. Now, this is, and when they talked to the police chief, he said, well, I didn't want to intervene because there were a lot of people who were watching it, and I just didn't want to get them, you know, in any danger or whatever. So we didn't do anything. We watched it. So it is this, picture this. Now, I have been in politics for a long time. I have all kinds of threats, have had for years. I've had to wear bulletproof vests and have SWAT teams take me in to speak and that sort of thing. But let's assume that, at some point in time, I'm running for governor or senator or whatever. And so Antifa comes out to my house and begins destroying it, my family's life. And the police do nothing because there are peaceful observers of this, right? I mean, this is how, but again, how far we have come down that road to the absolute destruction of the rule of law in this country, all because of the importance of the cult of multiculturalism. This is where it stems from. And it is their desire to change America dramatically and totally. You do it by attacking the basic norms, the things that are the sort of sinew of the American body. And that is what they've done, and that is an example of what happened in Aurora.
Yeah. It is tragic on the level that it's such a change in attitude for what the American citizen once understood to be what America and law and order is about. If you want to have a peaceful protest because you don't like a policy, that's one thing. When you get that active to the point that you could possibly be endangering citizens, not unlike the attempt to firebomb the ICE detention facility in Tacoma. This is just amazing. And it continues to boggle my mind. Unfortunately, we're running really tight on time now, Tom. So I would love to continue with the conversation because, again, it's been a very good conversation, and I appreciate that. But we've just got a few moments left, so tell us a little bit about the latest going on at We Build the Wall. We had a pretty good conversation. You told us a great story last time you were here about one of the successes building some border wall places where the folks told you couldn't do it, and you guys did it pretty quickly and pretty well. What's the latest going on there?
Okay, on the 25th and 26th, we'll be doing a symposium from the wall. We'll be bringing in people from all over the country, both people in Congress, people who are just people like Michelle Malkin, and I mean, there's just so many. I don't even know where to begin, but we'll be doing this a series of speakers and panels that will be broadcast from there. I'm sure not on any sort of mainstream media, but you can always get it through WeBuildTheWall.us. And I encourage people to go there. This is what my colleagues have done. I wish I could take credit for – I'm on the advisory board. You know what that means is that I talk to you about how wonderful it is. But the actual identifying the land, getting it all done through the process of all the junk that's necessary, and then the actual construction, that's all happened in a completely different world from mine. I just marvel at it. I look at it, and I encourage people to go to WeBuildTheWall.us and look what those folks did in what we were told that we could not build it within. That it was too expensive for the government to build $25 or $26 million, take maybe 10 or 15 months to do if they even got into it because of the terrain was so bad. We did it all. We built the wall in 11 days. We built it better than anything that is on the border. Our steel lasts for 75 years. The government steel, 25 years. Our sensors are 10 times better. Our lighting is better. We built the road out of concrete, not just, dirt, which is generally the case. Ours is a concrete wall a road along the wall so that the Border Patrol can use it to actually patrol. It is wonderful, and it was done for about $8.5 to $9 million, and it was done in, as they say, days. Well, 57 days from the time that we actually had to start getting permits. The time that we put the first shovel in the ground, the completion was 11 days, and the government said couldn't do it. So go to WeBuildTheWall.us and watch. It's a marvel.
All right. Thank you again for joining us tonight, Tom. And I tell you what, we're definitely going to have to do this again because there's as I said last time, still clearly a lot for us to talk about. Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work.
You too, my
friend. Ladies and gentlemen,
what you do is give me a megaphone, and I sincerely appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Tom Tancredo, former congressman and caller on the line. I'm sorry. We've run out of time. I'm at the end. But if you want to call back in tomorrow, by all means, feel free, because I have a feeling we're going to be talking about a lot of the same topics. And I appreciate you calling and holding just the same. Everybody in the chat room, thank you so much for being here as well. Bigfoot, Gary Comforter snuck in here before the end. Planky Chief, host of Simple Facts of Life, and the boy, the Alaskan. Thank you guys for all being here. And remember, no matter what else happens, no matter what else gets said, don't take my word for it. Definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, and more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for now. Come back tomorrow. See you then.
Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family. Using both hands.